Imagine you are handed one of the most storied college sports programs in New England, and you're charged with restoring its glory. Where do you begin? We have the new Boston College Athletic Director, Martin Jarman, with us. He's going to tell us his plans for the Eagles. Plus, we'll analyze what was one of the busiest weeks in recent memory for Boston sports. It's Friday the 13th, but you're in luck because we have a great podcast for you today. I'm Chris Gasper. This is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We have Martin Jarman with us today, and at age 37, he is the youngest athletic director among the Power Five conference schools. He's also the first African-American athletic director at Boston College. He's energetic, he's charismatic, he's social media savvy. Boston College is hoping that that translates into more support and greater competitiveness in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Martin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being on.
Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate you coming in. You know, Boston is sort of known as a pro sports city. How do you plan to sort of bring Boston College athletics more into prominence with the casual Boston sports fan, sort of the casual Boston College fan?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that quite a bit since I started. My observation is Boston is a winning city. And Boston, there's so many great franchises here, the Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox, and Patriots, obviously, that win. And so, you know, what I look to do is first, we got to establish that culture, that competitive excellence culture across our sport programs, and worry about what we do first before we, you know, try to figure out the pro landscape or what I hear. You know, I think it's a winning city, and people want to win, and we want to win, and that's what's important. So my job is to focus on all the things we need to do to achieve that competitive excellence consistently.
And obviously you came from Ohio State. That's certainly a winning program in many, many sports. Now you're at Boston College. You are overseeing 750 student-athletes in 31 varsity sports. That is certainly a lot. How do you tackle that? How do you wrap your arms around that?
Yeah, you know, we're blessed that we have a comprehensive sports program where we offer a lot of opportunities for young men and young women to compete at the highest level, and that's what we're about. But we've got a great team in place. I can't be everywhere, so I rely on our staff and our team to help me make sure that I'm where I need to be and have the touch points that I need to have. But, you know, we've got great student athletes. It's a lot, but 750, you know, one thing at a time and one student athlete at a time. And we've done a lot since I've gotten here in June to really connect and engage with our student athletes, and still learning to try to meet some of our teams. And it's exciting. You know, it's all, you know, starting school. It's like starting being a new kid and meeting a lot of people and doing a lot of things. And so we're excited about it.
As you mentioned, you started the job in June. You were formally introduced in April. And at that introductory press conference, you mentioned that you wanted programs that were consistently competitive. For the Boston College men's and women's basketball programs and the football program over the last couple of years, that hasn't necessarily been the case, particularly in the ACC. BC football 2-17 over the last three seasons. Over the last two seasons, the basketball program is 2-36 in ACC play. How do you go about changing that and changing that culture?
Well, you have to look at the whole entire program. And, you know, it's not just one thing. It's every aspect of it. And as a new person coming in, you know, my job is to look at all of our programs, not just those, and just evaluate how we're doing things and look to see where I can help and make a difference. Now, you know, quite frankly, those are two of the three revenue generating sports. And so we'd have to focus on those. You know, basketball, football, and men's ice hockey are very important to us as far as a revenue generating perspective, and also to alumni pride and some things from a brand standpoint that are important. It's one thing at a time. You know, you don't become a certain level overnight, but you got to do the work every day. You've got to assess quickly and understand what do we need to be competitive consistently.
How much would it help if you were able to get the men's and women's basketball programs the exposure of being back in the NCAA tournament? You look at the men's program, they haven't gone since 2009. They haven't posted a winning record since 2011. The women have not had a winning record since 2011 as well, and they haven't gone to the NCAA tournament since 2006. How important is it to sort of get that exposure back of getting into the NCAA tournament?
Oh, it's very important. You know, obviously getting to the NCAA tournament is usually representative of a successful season, and it's also from a national perspective and university, it gets us out there. So that's really important. So we've got to look at, and ACC is a great platform to do that. I think last year in men's basketball, I think 9 teams made the NCAA tournament. So you have opportunities. But also with those opportunities, it's tough competition. Everybody's trying to win, So that's one of the things that we look at as far as at BC, what are our competitive advantages? Where do we need to get better and work towards that? And so, that's a goal of ours, no doubt, no question. That would be huge for us. You look at South Carolina last year, men's basketball, have a Final Four run, and, all of a sudden alumni participation is up, development is engaged more, admissions, So that's really important for not just our athletic department, for our institution as well. So I'm very well aware of that.
You've mentioned the advantages that Boston College has and maybe some of the challenges in the ACC. What are the advantages specifically, and what are the biggest challenges you see for a school like Boston College, which is a great academic institution? It's a private school, tremendous campus. So it does have a lot going for it, but you're competing with some schools that are big state schools as well.
Sure. First and foremost, it starts with our people. And we have great people at BC, but our values, our Jesuit Catholic background and values are something that sets us apart, And when you come to BC, we develop the whole person. And it's not just, you're a good teacher when you leave, or you're a good whatever profession you want. But, what kind of husband are you? What kind of wife are you? What kind of person are you? How do you serve? And so that's what makes BC unique. So we've had to use that. That's the number one thing I feel recruiting-wise that sets us apart nationally and competitively. And then you've got to look at the great academics that we have. Obviously, we're one of the top preeminent institutions academically in the country. And when you come to BC, the value proposition of getting the best academic experience and a great degree while also competing at the highest level in the ACC, Hockey East. I mean, that's big-time athletics. That's big-time competition. And as a student athlete, you want to come and compete against the best. I want us recruiting young men and young women that want to be great, that want to be excellent, and that want to compete against the best. We don't shy away from that. We embrace competition. However, we also have to know and understand that that doesn't appeal to everybody. You got to look at facilities. Our facilities are the teaching environments. Those are the laboratories for our young student athletes to grow, learn, discipline, respect, accountability. No different than a great professor wants a great laboratory to do their work or to do research. Our coaches need that facility, that environment for our student athletes to be their best and to recruit. And so that's really important. And there's a laser focus on that now from me and from our administration as far as just what are the resources and facilities that we're utilizing and what we need to do to help us with that competitive excellence push.
And there is a big facilities push, right, at BC?
Yes.
Going at more than $200 million?
Yes. We've got a softball field, a baseball field, an indoor practice facility, football weight room. So we've got a lot going, but we can't stop, and that's one of the things that I've told our staff. And I've been meeting a lot of alumni and donors that have really helped us move this forward with some of the projects now. But we can't be in a place that we're complacent. We can't be relying on what we've done right now. We have to continue to push. And that's something that culturally, I don't know if we always have had that sense of urgency, but we got to have a sense of urgency when it comes to what we need resource-wise to help us be competitive.
You mentioned, Martin, sense of urgency. I think among some of the alumni and the fan base, there's maybe a sense of urgency to find out if you have some of the right people in place in some of these major programs. You look at men's basketball, Jim Christian, he has a contract that runs through, I believe, 2020. In 3 seasons, he's 29-67. That's a little over 300 winning percentage. How long do you need to be here before you can evaluate whether you have the right people in place at some of these programs as coaches?
Well, it all depends on the situation, how fast or how quickly you can grow and get the program to where you want it to be. I think you have to really look at all aspects of the program. Where have we been? How competitive have we been historically? Look at the competition now, and then evaluate the culture and leadership. And that takes time. That's not something that you can do overnight. But we also know we're in an environment that we want to win and we want to be successful. And all of our coaches know that. Jim knows that. Everybody knows that. And so for me, you don't put a timeline on that or a time frame. You just evaluate every day, just like I'm evaluated every day. And we go from there.
And also, I'd say Steve Addazio, the football coach, he's in his 5th season, 26-31, 3 bowl appearances. He's also signed through 2020. Right now, your football team is 2-4. I think Coach Addazio can be a little bit of a polarizing guy for people in the BC community. Really, he only had one down year. Those three bowl games, that's very good. But again, you're coming from Ohio State where there's a certain level of success. So how do you evaluate Coach Addazio?
You know, right now we're in the middle of the season. We got a lot of football left, and we got an opportunity this Saturday at Louisville. And I love Steve's passion. I love his energy. You know, he's coaching really hard, and the guys are really buying in and trying to get better. I'm excited about it. Obviously, I like Steve, and we got a lot of football left, so we're going to see how it finishes.
Now, people might not know this about you, Martin, but you are a former collegiate athlete. You are a captain at UNC Wilmington. You played in the NCAA tournament in 2000. How does that shape how you do this job as athletic director?
Yeah, well, it always keeps the focus on our student athletes. You know, I was a student athlete. I know how my experience was and how that shaped me and helped me grow and develop into the person I am today. And that's what I want to give back to our students. You know, that is why we're here. We are here to make sure that we give them a world-class experience, and we help foster a culture of winning and form them and develop them to where when they leave BC, they're better for it, and they're great people. And that's what my college experience as an athlete did for me, and that's what I want to do for them. So it makes it crystal clear, the focus. It's always on the students.
Yeah, I'm sure that helps you relate to those athletes as well. I wanted to ask you this. You are obviously the first African-American athletic director at Boston College. You're one of only 14 African-American athletic directors in Division I college sports. What was your perception of this city before you took this job? Because this is a city that in the past has had some issues with race, with not having enough diversity in terms of people in decision-making positions. So what was your perception before you came here? How has that changed since you've been here?
You know, my perspective was a winning culture, historic, energy, vibrant, hardworking, and it really hasn't changed since I've been here. You know, I was not really familiar with any of the racial climate that you had mentioned previously. I just wasn't aware of that, and you know, that's something, quite honestly, I don't really focus on. You know, I've got a big job, and you know, I'm just focused really on trying to help move BC forward, and also making sure my family is in a comfortable place, because we're still trying to find a house and buy a house and
that's
different
tough. Things.
Tough
market.
It's tough. It's a hot market right now.
I feel your pain on that. Trust me. You're not alone on that.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got enough to focus on. You know, I just try to do the best job that I can do, and we just put our head down. So,
the reason I ask you that question is that in a story by Julian Benbow, who did a great profile of you in the Boston Globe, there is an anecdote in there about an African-American prospective student-athlete who was considering BC having some concerns about the city and sort of the racial climate of the city and asking you about it, talking to you about that. Is that one of the challenges maybe for BC, rightly or wrongly, that there's sort of this perception that Boston is either unfriendly or unwelcoming to African-Americans, or if it's not that, it's a city that is maybe a little more segregated than some other major cities in that regard?
Yeah, it depends on the person. You know, everybody's different. That may be someone's perspective. That was that young man or that father's perspective at the time. But we have to be honest with who we are and where we are, you know, and you have to meet people where they are. So if they have a feeling about Boston or the climate, you know, my job is to help them understand that I hear you, I understand you, but there's a lot of great things about Boston, and I'm learning them
right now.
And so, you know, you're a product of your experiences, and that hasn't been my experience in Boston, so I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is Boston College, and I can speak to the environment we have on our campus, and I can speak to the community from that standpoint, and that's what I focus on. But you have to be realistic. Sometimes people may have a perspective that is shaped based on, you know, their interaction or their perceived notion of Boston and the climate here. Whether it's true or not. And I have to be honest with that and just say, this is my experience, and quite frankly, if that was the case, I wouldn't have come up to Boston. If I didn't feel like I could be supportive, if I didn't feel like it was an environment where I could be successful and thrive, I would never have come to Boston.
Boston College, very lucky to have you. If I can just offer you this little word of advice, you know what your biggest challenge is?
What's that?
The weather. You can't change the weather.
I keep hearing
as charismatic
about
as you are, you're great on social media, a lot of energy. I mean, you know, you should be hosting this podcast because you're smoother than I am. But I know sometimes in the recruiting game, man, the weather. You can't change that. Those Boston winters. So schedule all those recruiting visits in the fall and see if you can do it that way. I think that might help you guys.
We've had some good weather so far. You know, I thought it just stays like this for another 2 months.
Oh, you'll see.
We'll be good.
But I like it because you brought the good weather. So that's good. That's good, Martin. All right. We really appreciate that. That's Martin Jarman, Boston College Athletic Director. He's going to do big things here at Boston College. A lot of passion, a lot of energy, and I think really a new perspective for Boston College Athletics that I think was probably needed at this point that you bring to the table. So that's great, and hopefully you'll come back and visit us. And the next time I'm reciting these stats, we'll be talking about ACC championships and teams that have won, you know, 25 of the last 30 games.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm excited about leading BC Athletics, and to all our fans, they've been so passionate and so supportive. Love the direction we're moving, and I'm excited to lead.
And I just want to let people know that's at Martin Jarman, Jarman, J-A-R-M-O-N-D. I have to say, Martin, this is the best conversation as a Boston University Terrier I've ever had with the BC Eagles. So thanks again for coming
by. We'll get you to a game. We'll convert you.
Sounds like a plan. I don't know about conversion, but it sounds like a plan. Thank you for coming in.
All right, we'll see you.
Coming up in just a minute, what a week in Boston sports. What was your favorite moment or least favorite moment, as it is with the Red Sox being eliminated from the playoffs? We'll go over the best and worst from the week that was. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Season Ticket. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. It's the best way to ensure you'll get us as soon as the show is available. Okay, it's been a really interesting week in Boston sports. Some would say a painful week in Boston sports. It was that rare time of year. We had all four teams in play here. That includes the Celtics in the preseason and the Red Sox getting eliminated from the postseason. To take a look at the week, we now have Boston Globe sports editor Joe Sullivan. Joe, two things from this week stood out to me. John Farrell getting fired as Red Sox manager, and then Tom Brady. And I feel like the Tom Brady shoulder injury, it's his left shoulder, sort of flying under the radar.
It really is kind of flying under the radar.
It's a little scary.
They had a Tuesday practice because they were coming off the Thursday game.
He sat out Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Did not practice.
So, he probably can afford to get away with not practicing, but he's a guy that always talks about how valuable practice is, does he not?
Absolutely.
And so I thought watching that game in Tampa, you know, he took a lot of hits. He definitely got hurt in that game, and they're saying it's a shoulder, but we can't, you know, I pick on the Patriots for not telling the truth. That's because they don't. But other teams lie in the injury report, too.
Seahawks did it last year with Richard Sherman. He had a knee injury that they never revealed all year.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're not alone in cheating on the, or lying on the injury report. So they're saying left shoulder, but definitely looked like there was something wrong.
Yeah, and he has been flexing his hand, his right hand is throwing here. Look, here's what teams will do, and I'm not saying the Patriots are doing this, but sometimes a guy has multiple injuries. And so he's on the injury report with something that is actually injured, AC joint in the left shoulder, but there might be something else that's not being mentioned. This reminds me a little bit of 2009 when he came back from the torn ACL he suffered in the first game in 2008. He was banged up like all year. You know, he had a rib injury. He had something going on with his thumb. And he played at a high level, but eventually that stuff catches up to you. And they just had so many injuries. For me, for Tom Brady to be injured 5 games into the season is obviously not a good sign because there's a long way to go.
They're lucky they have an easy opponent this week. Despite the Jets' 3-2 record, this will be an easy victory.
This would be a good week to run the ball. The Jets 30th in the league against the run. That prevents Brady from taking some hits. Speaking of taking hits, John Farrell had to take the hit for the Red Sox being eliminated from the postseason for the second consecutive season. It's interesting with Farrell. I think this was a move a lot of people wanted and people saw coming. But what's interesting about it is I still think it's hard to make the case that he deserved it. Like, I understand why they did it. I probably would have done it too. But it's just such an odd scenario to have a guy who wins 93 games in back-to-back seasons and you feel like, yeah, they probably should move on from this guy.
It's rare for certain that a manager that wins a division and gets into the playoffs gets fired. It doesn't happen very often. So you could make that argument that it doesn't deserve to be fired. So, but who are we going to give responsibility? Who fired him? The talk shows? Gasper and Shaughnessy? who got him fired, Chris?
I mean,
because
I think it's
obviously people wanted him fired.
Yeah, well, we don't really know the reason from Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski. He didn't go into detail on why he moved on from Farrell. He just simply said it wasn't something that was a spur-of-the-moment decision.
The idea that he couldn't connect with the younger players, it's such a – how do you measure that? That's worse than war, Chris.
Well
– You know, how do you measure war? How do you measure interaction with young players? Yeah, so it's a really a hard thing to measure. It's, you know, wins and losses are a lot better measurement.
You know, when you look at the explanation for something, it's always the simplest explanation. The simplest thing is that was not Dombrowski's guy. He didn't hire John Farrell.
That's right.
He had nothing invested in the success of John Farrell. So it's easy for him to move on and just get his own guy in place.
Yeah, and you see that all the time, even in business, that people want their own.
Yeah, you like your own people.
I do like my own people better than people I inherited.
Yeah, but, exactly.
You're my people.
Am I? Am I one? I don't know. I think you might have inherited me. I could be on the chopping
block.
No,
no, no. You're my people. I inherited Shaughnessy, but I put up with him.
That's pretty good. No, is Shaughnessy your David Price?
Well, he can act that way sometimes.
Well, yeah. Ooh, see, Dan's not going to like that. Dan's not going to like any comparison to David Price. Okay, so just to go on this. See, I thought you would say I was the David Price, because let's be honest here, Joe, and you can be honest. You don't have to hurt my feelings. I'm kind of high maintenance.
Well, yes, you can be high maintenance, Chris. I would agree with that. So now the audience knows. But, Chris, it's worth it for the quality.
Oh, nice save. Well, Joe, this was great. Your last appearance ever on Season Ticket was really good. You know, just kidding. No, that was great, Joe. And we had to, let's be honest, like, come on. You know, I would say I'm like Pedro Martinez. I need that, or Manny Ramirez. I need that break every once in a while in the middle of the season to go visit one of my grandparents who may or may not be alive. And I can't remember which one, but I just need that little break. So that's good. Big takeaways for the week, Season Ticket listeners. Tom Brady injury, be concerned. John Farrell obviously gone. Chris Gasper, high maintenance host of Season Ticket. Finally, a segment we call the cheap seats. Pro Football pundits predicted that New York was going to have one of the worst teams in the NFL this season. That turned out to be true. It's just not the team everybody thought. The New York Jets were supposed to be New York's tabloid, back page, bottom feeding team. Instead, it's been the New York Giants who have taken on that role, and they're one of the league's three remaining winless teams. This Sunday, while the 3-2 Jets host the 3-2 Patriots at MetLife Stadium with first place in the AFC East on the line, the 0-5 Giants are seeking their first win of the season in Denver. It has been a disastrous season for the Giants, with more drama than wins. Coach Ben McAdoo publicly criticized star quarterback Eli Manning. Star wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. broke his ankle and is out for the season. Veteran cornerback Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie has been suspended by the team indefinitely after he walked out of a team meeting. The Giants and Jets share a stadium, but New York football misery, oh, that belongs to the Giants alone this season. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Season Ticket is a production of the WBUR iLab and the Boston Globe. I'm Chris Gasper, and today, before we go, we're sharing a preview for WBUR and NPR's Only a Game. They're airing a special report, Power, Money, and Corruption, the Exploitation of College Athletes, this weekend. Give this a listen.